Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome today to a very special show, Voice Rising. So many of our problems, war, poverty, isolation, climate crisis, have their roots in an old story. The story that violence is inevitable, that our world will always be at war, that people will always find ways to hate. Yet the question today is this the truth? Are we born conflicted? Is it our nature to be in constant struggle? Or has the story been fed to us and it continues to repeat itself until we dare to rewrite it? With me today in studio is Michael Nagler. He is an author, peace activist, founder and president of the Meta Center for Nonviolence. And together, we're going to explore these questions. What is the frequency of peace? Is peace our true nature? And how can we collectively shift harm to harmony? Welcome, Michael, to Voice Rising.
Thank you so much, Kara. I'm absolutely delighted to be here on Home Radio.
Thank you. And I am sitting in the middle of Europe. I'm sitting in Berlin, and I know you're on the West Coast, so you're in California. You've written your last book, which is called The Third Harmony, The New Story of Human Nature. And you've also produced a documentary, which I have watched and recommended and highly recommended to everybody out there. There is a board game, which I have not yet tried, but which I hope to try at some point. Tell us, from all your years of experience, what you've learned as a meditator and peace activist, how we can create harmony in a world that appears to be very violent.
Well, that is the question, isn't it? We used to say the $64,000 question, but it's, of course, it's inflation has set in, and it's worth much more than that.
Yes.
I think we can only succeed in this noble search by discovering who we are. And the simple fact, well, there's two facts about our human nature that have to be understood, and that are almost completely covered up by what we call the old story. Mm-hmm. The old story of human nature being that we are our physical bodies, and so therefore we're separate. Just look at us. So therefore, our interests are going to be in conflict. And therefore, the Darwinian notion of survival of the fittest translates into a kind of social Darwinism, and that there's no escaping from all of that. So the new story says, well, now wait a minute. There is abundant evidence that, yes, we have physical bodies, no question about that, but we also have two other elements which are by logarithmic jumps or quantum jumps, if you will, more powerful, more significant, more hopeful, and much more who we really are. And those mm-hmm. two jumps up from the physical body are from matter to mind and from mind to spirit, or in terms of the human being, from body to mind, from mind to consciousness. And that there have been, since times immemorial, disciplines which enable people to get quiet in the turmoil of the mind so that we can become more aware of consciousness. And the other incredible feature of consciousness is that it is unitary. You know, there is no rupture, there's no break between consciousness anywhere in any living being.
Yeah.
So when we become aware of that, I'm going on and on a little here, Cara, if that's all
No, it's fine. I mean, it is unitary. It's unitary like, of course, consciousness, we're all connected in breath. We're all connected. You know, there's that saying, we bleed the same blood color, right? There's no, we're very interconnected as beings. Mm-hmm. I mean, my struggle, I guess, you know, sitting in Berlin and watching another war unfold, and of course, Berlin having the rich history that it does of wars, especially, you know, we ended with a horrific Second World War, and then there was a lot of division. And when the wall fell, it was an incredibly powerful moment of unity in the city.
Yes.
And there was so much hope and power to rebuild. And there's so much hope in this idea of how can also Europe, many different cultures, different languages come together. And I guess maybe this is where I ask somebody with your wisdom is, you know, it's kind of like here we know that the rose flower is so precious. And we have, I mean, I've been meditating daily for years. And what can we do in these moments when people are fleeing, bombs are falling, and we're watching not only a war unfold, yet another war, because people talk about it, this as if it's the only war. I mean, we have Yemen, we had Syria, we have continuous war. We also have a planet crisis. You're in California, you know that the you know, there were wildfires. So it's like we're really... You would think that we do everything to invest in love in the new story, right? Because we're committing suicide, right? So what is it? Is it the that we look at the otherness instead of the oneness? Is it the mass media, which is feeding us these stories that is the way we are, that history will always repeat itself? What is it that makes us, I mean, thousands of people want, millions of people want peace. Mm-hmm. So what is it that keeps us from understanding that this is our true nature, right? I mean, that is what your books are about. This is peace mm-hmm. is our true nature, which it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
well,
what
if
we're...
We ask,
yeah.
Yeah, if we ask Cara, you know, what is it... I think the old simile that you frequently meet with in the spiritual tradition is imagine a brilliant jewel that's mm-hmm. Buried in a pond, sunk in a pond,
mm-hmm.
and there's a wind, and the wind is stirring up waves on the surface of the pond, which do not allow you to see that jewel. The jewel, in this case, being our unity. The mm-hmm. absolute indivisible unity of consciousness, including that yearning that you referred to with the coming down of the wall. I remember, you know, standing in Berlin not too long ago and seeing the marks on the street where the wall had been.
Yeah.
The feeling of joy that human beings experience when those walls come down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the shift to a new story means, and it is happening slowly, mm-hmm. is the recognition that the ultimate divisions are actually within us. They're within our own consciousness. And that is the place that we have to work. And that is a place where we can work. I mean, I cannot cure the divisions in another person, much less the divisions in the international community, quote unquote. But I can work on the fractures in my own consciousness with these spiritual practices that you mm-hmm. that you referred to. And I think one of the things that makes it a little bit, well, there's two things that makes it implausible or beyond reach for a Western modern person. One is that it's extremely difficult, and we're conditioned to think we're going to go out and buy something or eat something or inject something and the problem will be over. Mm-hmm. It flies in the face of that kind of wishful thinking. And the other is what you just referenced, the mass media. They're constantly pummeling us with this story of separateness and, if it leads, it bleeds kind of thing. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that's what the third harmony is about. You know, the three harmonies are harmony with nature, harmony with one another, and finally harmony within ourselves. And a human being who achieves that third harmony gains a tremendous power because of the ultimate truth value of that vision of unity. So that's how you get a Gandhi or, you know, Mandela or somebody else. They have so harmonized the forces and the various layers within their own consciousness that one thing that automatically happens then is that you realize that your consciousness is identical with others. Mm-hmm. It's only because we're so conditioned to think of ourselves as a body that we think of ourselves as separate. As we go to mind, we find, like you and I are having this conversation right now, our minds are joined. And yes. above and beyond that, our consciousness is one. It was never separate. It's just something that we have to realize by, as I say, dampening those vibrations in the mind. And, modern sciences have been helpful here. We're going to teach a course starting Friday here at the Meta Center on science and nonviolence. Modern science has been helpful showing that there are connections among human beings that we are not aware of and cannot account for on the physical level, and really documenting how all of reality is an interconnected whole.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit about quantum physics and non-locality, how even though there's, let's say, in this moment, a war happening, we can still feel a connection and, how would you say, navigate in a way together that we can be a force of peace and support peace, although it's thousands of miles away.
Well, when you reach into that quantum world, distance doesn't seem to matter. That was one of the incredible discoveries mm-hmm. that was made in the very early years, that a quantum event that occurs, which is really any event, really propagates throughout the whole universe. It happens everywhere, space and even time for that matter. In a sense, do not exist in the quantum world. However, that is a nice abstract idea, but what we have to do is explore it and experience it in our own lives. I remember, it's a funny little episode that I always like to start with, Cara. I was going over to San Francisco one time from East Bay in a bus, and these two kind of teenage girls were sitting in front of me, and they were talking, and one of them said to the other, "I don't know why things go better when I'm nice to the creep. They just do." And so it's all about that. Now, if that poor young lady had a theory explaining why things go better when you're nice to creeps, that insight, that experiential discovery that she made would have stuck. and she could have built on it. So that's what the Third Harmony Project is all about, the book, the film, the board game, is to give people that model to understand that the divisions among us are on the surface, and the unity that is all that is among us, that we all are, is at the very depth. So I think now to get down to what you're actually asking me, is I think that when a person reaches that kind of unity, it spreads. And we can now document how things like that spread through neuroscientific experiments. And through little experiences that we've all had. We've all had some kind of strange connection with another person. I once, you know, had a connection with my son when he was in London and I was in California. I had a dream that he had hurt himself, and I emailed him the next day. I said, "Josh, are you all right?" And he said, "You know, no, I broke my ankle yesterday."
Mm, yeah.
So, you know, there are those glimpses of unitary reality. I remember when I invited a professor, a colleague of mine, to give a lecture to my peace studies course. He asked, you know, why is it that physics has made these brilliant reaches?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still with me? Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I know there is some honk.
there's some funny junk happening. When, you know, biology is lagging behind, and he said to my students and me that it's because physics deals with the world of uniformity. You know, every electron in the universe has the same size, the same mass, the same charge.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the world of biology, every single one of us is unique, from plants mm-hmm. on up. And that it's hard for us to deal with that. We don't know how to, you know, find the patterns. But one thing we do know is that if we learn to use our perception and our logic to learn from history and our own experiences, it is very obvious that nonviolence is our true nature. It's our inner being. It's an inheritance, a legacy that we've all somehow come into by being human beings, and that it can be institutionalized.
Well, that's the exciting part, I think, for, mm-hmm. you know, for meditators, for artists, for people that have looked at this from all, you know, all sides,
yeah.
is that we, and if we just go back, if we could just really feel into our bodies, or if we have had families, we know that every child is born really with a very open heart, and they don't have these divisions that I can't remember who said it, but basically hatred is something taught, right? It's not something we're born with.
Carefully. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to be. And so that is the exciting part. You know, I guess the question for me, because I'm, you know, I read your book, and I think your work is amazing. And I personally think, similar to, you know, I think that's where biology and physics actually meet, actually, is that there is a coherency. There is a longing for that piece of grass to pop itself through cement. There's a longing for life, right? For mm-hmm. There's a longing for regeneration. And in music, there's definitely, I always say that music is one of the most incredible things, because music is always resolving. You'll rarely have even a piece of music that lands in another key, right? It's always seeking home, right? And there's always a need for harmony. We used to do stories like that. The stories used to be once upon a time, and then at the end we'd say, and they lived happily ever after. And we felt good about that, right? And now we're having all these cliffhangers that we never resolve. We never finish the story, right? So, but the question, I guess, where I'm just so fascinated is that, you know, if it is, If we're born with peace as our nature, which I think 99% of us would say yes, and if then the division or the hatred or the otherness and not the unity consciousness is something that is conditioned into us, then one would think, and now this is my question on the wise professor in California, that it would be costing us pennies to say, okay, wait a minute, how can I put peace studies in the schools instead of, I raised a family, seeing children learn about Hitler, Stalin, Napoleon, and have to be tested on them and have to win the test mm-hmm. with the A's on who conquered which country, right? Mm-hmm. So kids are literally from the age of, well, I would say probably 8 or 9 already being conditioned in the school system. And then we have all the films with the good guy, bad guy, whatever. So if we know that this is costing us our planet, our, you know, we have domestic violence, we have school shootings, we have, now we have another war. Why in the world? I mean, we're all very smart people. Are we not, are we continue to invest billions in movies and books that are repeating this saga of divide and conquer and not investing radically in media and entertainment and not media or stories that are uplifting and showing the humanity that we actually have?
Well, I was on a panel yesterday, but as mm-hmm. I listened into it, and one speaker pointed out that in a particular category, the European Union is investing $80 billion in something called defense and $1 billion in peace building. And like many people, my colleagues, like yourself, I'm sure, one way to trace it to something simple that we can grasp onto is sense of separateness. Whenever, mm-hmm. if there is a sense of separateness, there's going to be fear. And if there's going to be fear, there's going to be anger. Mm-hmm. And I never really have fathomed why our media are constantly harping on that when on those rare occasions when they bring out some kind of glimpse of unity. Like there's a little story out here not too long ago, it didn't happen in California, but reported out here about, a woman had gone off onto a frozen pond and the ice cracked and a couple of people who were standing on the shore just, you know, kicked their shoes off and jumped into that frozen water to drag
save her
out at great, mm-hmm. yeah, at great danger to themselves. But somehow we're conditioned to think that we're separate. And ultimately what it comes down to is that we're conditioned to believe that we're only physical. So
I have to correct your colleague because only Germany just committed to 100 billion euros, which is more than dollars, only the country of Germany for new weapons within a couple days. So it's only Germany, right? So
yeah.
Europe in general, together with France, this is a very huge thing. But I, being, you know, older than one could ever imagine. I remember you are a little bit, tiny bit, but I remember watching the shows such as, what's the theme song? Bum, dum, buddy, dum, dum, buddy, dee, 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 like Andy Griffith, right? I think. Or, you know, we had shows like Lassie or whatever. So it just seems like the I Love Lucy, right? Which maybe there were stereotypes in there and everything, but it does seem like everything has become faster. The messaging is huge, and it It does seem. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't have a television, you see, so maybe I'm totally off base here.
Yeah.
I do not have a television anymore since 20 years. So maybe I'm misassessing this. But it just seems like the violence is a norm. And the interesting thing is, what do you think would be the steps if we could? And I want to say we should and will and are. I know you and I are, and I have many great friends that are rewriting this story. I did write here, you have 5 points in your book.
Oh, good.
Do you want me to list them for you too?
Why don't you listen for the audience? I remember them pretty well.
You know, you probably know them, right? So this is what I have, is that you know, bringing the third harmony to life, this roadmap. The first one is out with the old, which is a little bit what we're talking about, to avoid violence and vulgarity in mass media.
Yeah, this is what every individual can do.
And what shocked me is that you wrote in your book, the acceptance of violence was the fastest growing value in America from 1993 to 2004. Now, I'm not sure if the studies, I'm assuming it just continued to grow. And you had written that this, the Greek philosopher,
Epictetus.
Yeah, Epictetus. That the only thing we can control and the only thing we need to control is the imagery of our own mind. And he said this 2,000 years ago, so we're like, a little bit slow. So then so basically to understand that what we focus on, we become. And then the second point was in with the new is to learn all we can about nonviolence, which is where your work, of course, is coming in. Number three would be spiritual practices. Number four, prioritize personal relationships. And number five would be to be the new story.
Yeah, to learn it and it kind of assimilate it as your window onto the world. And on occasions when it becomes appropriate, to explain to people what the new story is, what the evidence for it is, and how it makes sense of our own experiences, which in many cases we are denying or just putting aside and considering as anomalies. Mm-hmm. And, this shouldn't have, there's no explanation for this. Okay, kick it aside and carry on. So I think, and I hope I made this clear in the book, that we need to re-educate ourselves right across the board. We need to be teaching the new science, physics, the biology, the social science, and we need to be one really powerful place where we could be instituting it would be the criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
which is right now based entirely on a kind of abstract concept of revenge and harm. But there are these pockets, these experiments in restorative justice, and they work much, much better. What we've been missing, and that's where the gap that I'm trying to fill here, is we have not been able to explain why they're better. Mm-hmm. And when we can't explain it, again, we say, that was an anomaly, back to the same old, same old. But when we have a new story in our mind, a story of unity and that non-physical reality to the human being, which is, what every spiritual tradition has been saying for 5,000 years, and what every human being begins to glimpse a little bit in meditation, that with this new story, it makes perfect sense that when we make a peace overture towards another party with whom we have a conflict, we change the field, we change the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are courageous enough to hang on to that, we could build it out in every relationship we have. Personal relationships, society, its institutions, and finally the international arena.
I love the story that you wrote in the book, and I'm trying to think of which school it was, but it was on the East Coast, and basically it was one of the most, was a school that was really struggling with a lot of detentions and problems, and the new principal, I mean, if I'm saying the story right, just came in and basically knew this has to change, but took the big risk and got rid of all the security guards and took that money and put in the arts. And that's, I guess, you know, what I'm passionate about as an artist and as a songwriter. And if we look at a symphony, right, you have somebody playing the freaking tuba, right? And then you have in that same, I mean, that is really diversity and unity right there in your face. You have a piccolo, you have a tuba player, you have, you know, and they're all working together. Yeah, and some of them are playing the melody, and some of them are playing the rhythm, and some of them are standing literally for 36 bars until they can get the triangle to go ding, you know? It's unbelievable. And I just, you know, with all these cutbacks, and even in Europe, Berlin used to have more monies for the arts than the American government altogether, right? When I arrived here, which was in the mid-80s, and it's slowly being cut back because we have simply a refugee crisis that is not only now, it also came through the wars in the Middle East, many, many things. And the first thing that seems to be cut is the arts. And yet it seems like when we see that story, that it's the arts that give us the humanity. And I'm not talking about the mass media stories. I'm talking about, you know, people singing together and dancing and choreographing that lift us up into a new story, right? Mm-hmm. So what is your experience with using creativity to build peace?
Well, I remember when I was an undergraduate student, so we're going back there, I was very much involved in folk music. Mm-hmm. It started for me when I was in New York City before I went up to Cornell. And we invited Pete Seeger, the great hero.
Nice.
Yeah, to come and give a talk. And I was part of a group who was hosting him. And he said something that shocked me, and I thought it was dead wrong. And then I grew up, and I realized it's absolutely right. And that is, he said that creativity can be expressed in anything. It doesn't have to be. Art is a symbolic avenue for creativity, but you can use the same. He didn't put it this way, but this is how I understand it now. The same mental struggle that an artist goes through to hit that harmony, to create that sum, as they call it in Indian music, is exactly the same as it would be in working out a conflict that you have with others. And in coming to grips with the deeper nature of humanity. Now, when he said that, I was quite offended. I said, you know, no, art, music, they are in a class by themselves. They're, you know, the rest of life is just this grubby struggle for survival. But, you know, I came to realize that he is right, that this feeling of creativity, this expression of our inner creativity, makes us alive and fulfills us and gives us a happiness which is much longer lasting than the happiness we might get from consuming this, much less the the apparent happiness that we get from dominating another person.
Yeah.
So we're being very badly served by our mass media, which emphasizes the latter. And, you know, I guess there's some commercial reasons for that. you know, what once you have conditioned people to look to the, quote, excitement of conflict, they will at first at least find it very boring to look at heroic stories of unity, unification. Mm. So we have to be reconditioned. And the hope is, I mean, the path that one can discover is that when one does this in oneself, which is a lifelong practice, no question about it, when you accomplish to the extent, let's put it that way, to the extent that you accomplish it in yourself, you have that harmonic influence on the world around you. And that's where some of the really modern discoveries, really new, well, they're not so new anymore, but the discoveries of quantum reality and the interconnectedness between brains, for example, at a distance that neuroscience has discovered.
Intention experience, maybe, or Heart Math Institute, or
that's what Heart Math is very good at this, you know, or the unitary nature of consciousness. That those things are not part of what we've called the Newtonian classical story of physical separate reality. And I don't know what goes on in the schools now, but I know I was taught strictly Newtonian physics, you know. Well, the world is a set of billiard balls, and if you know the direction and velocity, you can predict everything. There was no sense. Well, what infuriated me later in life was to discover that quantum theory had been around for 50 years, which is basically a story of non-locality, which means, you know, an event that seems to our perception to happen in one local region is really a readjustment of the entire universe. And, you know, that was propagated because it was convenient and graspable. But I maintain, and experiences have shown here and there, that it's just as easy, just as feasible to condition people to see the unity, the spiritual interconnectedness, if you like, the unity of it all.
Yeah, or this beauty, you know, that a birch tree and a pine tree and a oak tree and a maple tree are all different and yet are all trees, right? This kind of idea that it doesn't have to be either or. It can be that we're in the depths, we're all unified, and we're also very diverse.
On the surface. So that is when I finally came to that, Cara, that is the main problem, is to not have a sense that we have depth. And there's a American writer, Ken Wilber, who coined this term, flatlanders. We're all flatlanders. We think that the surface level of our consciousness, our likes and dislikes, the little things that we cobble together and say, this is us, meaning our personality, forgetting that the word personality comes from a Latin word meaning a mask, that is the reality. So this lacking a sense of depth leaves us kind of stranded and frightened and isolated, and that's what we have to correct. I remember one time when I was still teaching, I was walking across a little bridge out back of my building, and one of my favorite students was sitting on the railing of the bridge just crying her eyes out, and you know, I stopped and I said, "What's the matter, honey?" We fell to talking, and it was about the deplorable nature of the world and all of this separateness. And I said to her, what you're seeing is there, but there is another world. And since then, I've gone two steps further, that we can not just become aware of, but locate ourselves in that other world. And we can use that awareness as a new set of criteria for designing the outside world.
And that's boy, a beautiful that, vision. Yeah.
It's kept me going all these many years.
Micah, we're coming to the close of this show. You talk about, you know, moving the heart. If you had a couple of words for people, I think that's a beautiful image. It's like we tend to focus on what's not going right, but there's a lot of things that are going incredibly right. I mean, people are opening their homes in Berlin. People are really cooking together. People are working passionately to save our planet. People are planting trees. What are a couple of words that you could give the people to keep in their little golden nuggets for their pockets, that to give them the hope that we can change the story and write a new story?
I think people should have absolute faith that that is who we really are, and that because that's who we really are, it cannot but prevail in the long run. And human life is very meaningful, and the meaning comes from the contribution that we make to that awareness that we've been talking about. That's about as few words as I can get it into.
Beautiful. Thank you, Michael. Michael Nagler. I don't have your homepage off the top of my head. It's maybe you want to say it quickly.
Yeah. Yes, it's metacenter.org. Meta has two T's.
Metacenter.org. Everybody out there, The Third Harmony is a wonderful documentary, also very touching, and you have many books. I thank you so much and for holding the frequency of peace for so many years. You're an inspiration. Thank you.
Thank you so much for recognizing and applauding that, Cara. Thank you.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.